Thanks for joining us for this episode. And before we get started, please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you may listen to podcasts. If you want to learn more about any guest featured in this episode or access any content or resources discussed, be sure to check out the show notes in the episode description. We hope today's episode increases truth and inspires hope in the lives of your church, your business, your family, and beyond. Welcome to the Must Increase Podcast.
All right, welcome or welcome back to what is going to be actually a part two of something that we started discussing last time. And it's this idea of being and leading responsible digital citizens. Now, again, this is the second installment to what we started last time. And so if you haven't heard part one, you're going to want to go check that out. Look up that being and leading responsible digital citizens as far as the first part. Watch that. We're going to be doing a little bit of review here in just a moment, but you're going to want to make sure you've heard the full one because it is kind of laying the foundation. It goes over a lot of the philosophical mentalities, if you will, and lays again a foundation for what we're going to be covering this time, which is more practical. And so we're going to dive right in by way of a brief review. My name is Luke Clayton, and I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I am honored to kind of lead this conversation and continue this discussion on this topic, which is really more relevant than ever, because as we discussed last time, what we are living in now is kind of a dual existence, if you will. There is, of course, our physical reality, which is, don't get me wrong, it's incredibly important, is the most important. It is vital to what we are doing in terms of how we live. Obviously, it involves those around us in terms of our loved ones and those, our families, our friends. That is our physical reality. We don't want to lose sight of physical reality, but it doesn't take away from the fact that there is a digital existence. There is a digital footprint, if you will, of each and every individual in modern day society. We live in a digital culture. We're able to digitally connect. We're able to experience digital community, which makes each and every one of us a digital citizen. And as we discussed last time, there is oftentimes this two-facedness, if you will, to the reality of a person, who they are in person, as far as their physical being, and then who they are online in their digital citizen format. Some people can be an online troll online, as far as, again, in that digital world, but then a completely quiet, laid back to themselves, maybe even seemingly kind person in person. And so we have to realize that we have a responsibility as a part of the digital culture that we live in. And we're not just responsible to be digital citizens, we're responsible to lead them. And so when it comes to, for example, being a leader in a business or in a church or just in your home with your family, you have to acknowledge that this digital aspect is a part of our current culture. It's here to stay. We're not going to eradicate it from society. And so we have to be responsible in that way. And so let's dive right in to kind of that review I was talking about. And let's start by understanding that as we discuss these philosophies and today, the more practical principles and applications, that it's not necessarily a matter of right versus wrong. When it comes to technology, digital media, screens, phones, softwares, television, shows, movies, whatever it may be, these entities in and of themselves are not necessarily good or bad or right or wrong. Now, there would be some of the opinion that believe that there's just no good that can come out of technology. There's nothing good that could come out of media. But of course, while I can see why somebody might feel that way and feel discouraged in that way, because we do see so much negative, toxic content coming by way of media, really, media is a medium, meaning that it is a conduit. It's a channel that simply carries content, and that content can be right or wrong. It can be healthy or toxic based on the person delivering it, on the creator, on the producer. And so what we have to realize is that it's not about asking the question of what's right versus wrong when it comes to the utilization and enjoyment even of media, technology, screens, and so forth. But it's really a matter of what is wise versus unwise, because we realize that good things can become bad things when we allow them to take the place of the best things. So, for example, having the ability to contact your loved ones that may live states away by means of using a phone or a technology like FaceTime or a video chat like that is a wonderful thing. It's really, really good, actually. And even being able to stay connected on a more kind of broader scale through something like social media with friends and family that, you know, maybe you don't live nearby anymore, and kind of seeing what's going on with their lives, updating them on what's going on with you, and you can see what's happening with them as well. That's not necessarily a bad thing. However, when we spend all of our time in the physical world more involved in our digital world by constantly scrolling and liking and clicking and maybe gaming or messaging or whatever it may be, and we lose sight of the physical world around us and those loved ones in our immediate family, maybe, who are literally right there present in our very homes, that are sitting right there in our living room, right there beside us on our couch. And yet we're caught up with this idea of being just completely obsessed with staying connected with people digitally. Well, obviously, that is an example of a good thing that's become a bad thing because it's taking place of the best things. Again, going back to what I started with earlier, the physical reality that we live in will always be the best thing. We should always choose to be physically present in the moment with the people around us over the digital culture and connection that we can have through a screen or a technological device like that. And so it's not necessarily asking, good, is this good or is this bad? It's really more of a question of determining good versus best. It's really a matter of determining rather what is greater, what is more important, what is more essential and crucial. And so we kind of looked at an example of that last time, just to give one example, was we said that truths was always going to be greater than trends. The truth is always going to trump the trends. There's nothing wrong with maybe, you know, kind of keeping up with the trends and, you know, trying to maybe in your a sense of maybe fashion, trying to stay in style or keep up in terms of a trend of what's going on with the latest apps and the latest social media. I mean, really, the good people need to be there. The people with the values that we share and that we believe are right and truthful, they need to keep up with the trends so that we can spread the truth. But when it comes down to it, the truth is always what's more important than the trends. It's not that one is bad and one is wrong. It's not that truth is right and trends are wrong. No, but truth still is going to be greater. It's going to be prioritized higher than trends. And so we have to use that philosophy and have that mentality as we consider some other practical steps. Now, the practical steps that we're going to look at today are about how you can be a responsible digital citizen, but it's also how you can lead responsible citizens. And I will go ahead and say this. There's nothing special that I'm going to give you as far as the leadership aspect of it, because it's all about being a good example. It is about doing as I say, as well as doing as I do. Follow my example in this way. It's not just about preaching and teaching, it's about actually practicing and living it out. For example, you can't take away your child's phone or iPad and then proceed to spend the next several hours of your night with your family on your own phone or iPad. That is a do as I say, not as I do situation. No, you have to lead by example. And these are ways that are not only going to make you be a better digital citizen, that they're not only going to give you ways to practice healthy digital citizenship, but they're also a way for you to lead in that way by simply being an example. If you practice these, people will notice. You actually will be different. And in some context, you'll be weird. You won't be normal anymore. A normal person does not consciously think of these different practices and principles that we're going to be looking at. And so just by doing these, people will notice. They'll say, what's different about that guy? What's different about that person? That leader is really captivating by the way they aren't spending all of their time on their phone. By the way that they are kind of living their digital life. It's going to make a difference. So by simply putting these into practice, you will be a positive influence and example and a good leader in leading others to be responsible digital citizens. And so let's take a look at some of these principles. Now, as you can see here, there's kind of a board kind of previewing what we're going to discuss. I will tell you, we probably only have time in this particular part to discuss a couple of them, but we are going to make our way through all of these over the course of the series of these installments here. And so stick with me, but let's get started with the first one. And the first one is one of my favorites to discuss because it's so important. And that is that of discerning the narrative. Discerning the narrative. So the truth is we consume content by and large because it tells us a story. We open up that news app on our phone because it's telling us the story of what's going on in the world. We turn on that TV show or that movie because we want to be transported into a story of good versus evil or whatever it may be. We even involve ourselves in personal conversations, whether they're in the physical world or digitally, over some type of phone call or FaceTime or text message even. We involve ourselves in these conversations very often because we are interested in sharing and hearing stories of those that we want to communicate with. Story really drives everything. And in every piece of content and every piece of media, there is a narrative. There's an underlying story. And you have to be able to discern these narratives as you watch and consume this content. The concept here that we're trying to get across, remember, we're not just talking about what is right versus wrong. We're talking about what is wise versus unwise. We're talking about what is the better approach here. See, there's some people that when it comes to maybe movies and television and in their family, they have a very strict no or very limited consumption policy when it comes to maybe watching television or movies. And by the way, I do have to say, that is your call. If you're leading your home as a dad, as a parent, or parents there, you have that complete right to draw that line where you want that to be. If you want to say no TV in my house, that's completely your call. If you want to say only an hour of TV every day in my house, or 30 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever it may be, that's your call. And I encourage actually placing limits. That's something you should do. And in fact, I really believe that that's crucial, but it's also going to look different varying, you know, household to household, family to family. All that to say, it's your call to make if you do want to take a very extreme approach to saying, we're just not going to watch it. But I think most of us know that that's not a realistic expectation, because sheltering isn't always the answer. In fact, we can see some unhealthy results of people that were maybe raised in what we would call sheltered. So instead of sheltering, we're actually learning and teaching our families and those around us that to filter is better than to shelter. So to filter is better than to shelter. And one of the ways we can filter content that we're consuming, again, whether it be through a movie, a television, or even like a news outlet or whatever it may be, is by actually understanding how a story breaks down, recognizing certain components of it, and then being able to discern the narrative that's being communicated. Now, I will warn you, I may spoil movies for you moving forward, because what I'm about to show you is a very simplified framework that is existent in every story that has ever been told or ever will be told. Every movie, every TV series, every story of any kind, book you've ever read, fictional, even non-fictional, there is a story, and these elements do exist. And so, again, I'm just going to warn you, I may ruin good movies for you, because now you're going to be possibly most likely watching for these different elements. And you should be, because your mind perceives these whether you realize it or not. You subconsciously pick up on these elements, which is why you enjoy the story that's unfolding on the screen. However, because most people are not conscious about it, then therefore what happens is not only does a story get told, but a narrative on a certain worldview and perspective gets pushed and subconsciously even ingrained into the mind of the consumer. And so by simply activating your consciousness of, recognizing these elements of story, again, your brain already picks up on them. Now you're just going to consciously be able to pick up on these. This is going to help you to properly discern the narrative. And so let's look at these. Now, before I dive into all of these specifically, I do have to say that this is not original to me, because again, story has the device of story as a means of communication has been used for the entire human existence. And so obviously not original to me, but even the specific framework, again, this is a three-part simplified framework that has actually been derived from Donald Miller's seven-part framework in his book, Building a Story Brand. It's actually a marketing book. Donald Miller, who has been a longtime author, actually learned how to utilize story in effective marketing. And then he wrote the book, Building a Story Brand, to help you brand and market. And so if you're a business owner or church leader or involved in marketing in any way as a part of your job, then maybe you want to look into that book, Building a Story Brand, and actually see the full framework. That said, we're just going to dive into the simplified version and just look at three main components of a good story that, again, exists in every story you've ever heard or ever will hear, and every movie, every television show or series that you've ever watched or ever will watch. And so let's take a look at what these are. The first element is that of the character or the hero of the story. It's the main character, the central individual who is the protagonist of the story. And so this character is very often starts as someone who is doubtful of themselves or not confident, maybe they're inexperienced, but they, by the end of the story, we often see a character arc, we see growth, we see improvement, and they become, they learn and they grow through the experience of the story being told. But this is our main character. You know, this is our Luke Skywalker. This is our, I'm trying to think of another example, but you know, with all the movies I've seen, you think I could come up with one, but you know, this is our main character of the story. We will actually look at some specific examples here in a moment. So that's the character. Then the character, as he's growing and learning, he experiences and runs into a conflict. And the conflict is very often in the form of a villain. So to continue the Star Wars analogy, you know, Darth Vader is the villain of the original Star Wars trilogy. And so Luke Skywalker has to face multiple times a conflict there. And then even there's other conflicts more than just the surface level of fighting lightsabers. There's an inner conflict of, he's my father, spoiler alert, you know, 40-year-old movie. You should have seen it by now. But Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father, and he has to wrestle with that and deal with that. And so there's even an inner conflict there. And there's all types of levels of, honestly, this conflict that we see. And it's very often, again, presented by an antagonist or a villain. And so the character has to face and go up against some sort of conflict, and often in the form of a villain. And then, of course, there's the outcome. And the outcome in a good story is going to be victory for the protagonist, victory for the hero, victory for the character. You know, Luke Skywalker is going to defeat the Darth Vader, and the Empire is going to fall. You know, that is the outcome of the story. Now, again, most good stories are going to have an outcome that is favorable for the main character. And whenever that rule is broken, and there are occasions when maybe a movie or a TV series, what we would call maybe in literature a tragedy, where the main character actually does not have a favorable outcome, whenever that happens, while sometimes we may still enjoy the story or kind of feel for the main character, even though they're lost, there's a very often an incomplete sense of the story never came full circle, you know? And so that's while there's some exception to the victorious outcome of the main character, of the hero, this by and large, 99% of stories end with that favorable outcome for the hero. So now let's look at a few more just kind of basic examples of how this unfolds. And I like to use, you know, the Bible. It's a great source, lots of stories in the Bible. And so let's talk about one of the most popular characters of the Old Testament. Let's look at David. David, a shepherd boy, you know, he's kind of not thought of highly by even his own brothers, but he comes up against Goliath. This massive giant of a warrior who is leading the Philistine enemy army and is seemingly on the brink of conquering the Israelites. And they're saying, hey, who can fight this guy? And then David just comes up and says, hey, you're not going to defy my God, and I am going to use these 5 stones in a sling. And of course, the outcome is that David wins. David defeats Goliath. And that is honestly, even to those who aren't of faith and aren't believers in the God of the Bible in that way, even people that are again just see that as an excellent story, they recognize it for that. And it's so often used as a incredible example of a story, because it is the absolute physically seemingly massive, huge obstacle of a villain that the most unlikely of character overcomes. And we have such, the victory is so much sweeter as a result of that. Let's jump over to the New Testament, and let's hit up one of Jesus's parables. Jesus was a storyteller, uses parables very often throughout scripture and throughout the gospels. And so let's take a look at one of his examples in which he gives a parable of the Samaritan, as we've been knowing it as the parable of the Good Samaritan. But the Good Samaritan, actually, he's not really the hero of the story or the main character. The main character is the man who's traveling. And so he's traveling along this very dangerous highway and path. And then, yeah, as a result, he gets mugged, more or less. He gets attacked. He gets harassed. And he gets robbed, and he's essentially left to die. But the conflict is actually twofold. It's not just the attackers and the robbers. It's also those bystanders. It's that priest and that Levite who just simply pass by to the other side and have nothing to do with helping the man. And again, once again, just leave him to die. And then the outcome of the story is a direct result of the care of the Samaritan. And again, we can see maybe the Samaritan as a hero, but actually he would be considered more of a guide. And that's one of the deeper elements of the framework. But all that to say, this is an example of how Jesus took a main character, put him through a conflict, and gave a favorable outcome, and then used that to illustrate a powerful truth. Now, let's fast forward to maybe something more modern, you know, something in terms of movies and characters we're more familiar with now that maybe we've seen on the big screen, or in this case, the big screen and comic books. And that is, of course, the character Batman. Batman is a troubled orphan who overcomes his fear of even bats to become this iconic superhero. And in the case of the Batman story, the most popular villain is usually the Joker. And so because the Joker is just the absolute opposite of who the Batman is, and he's just, the Joker just wants to see the world burn. I think specifically of Heath Ledger's version of the Joker rather in The Dark Knight directed by Christopher Nolan there, the classic to me, the classic Batmans, the best Batmans. But the Joker is the villain there and presents just chaos and just an insane conflict for Batman to overcome. And of course, the outcome is he saves Gotham City from the Joker's madness. Another example, as we would look at, would actually be something that's going to hit a little more close to home. So this is how you can start to discern that narrative. This is how you can start to understand what is going on, again, as you watch for these things with your young person, with your child, as you're watching these certain shows or TV series. Very often, this is a framework that we find or a situation that plays out using this framework in popular teen, tween type of sitcoms. Something you might see on maybe the CW or the Disney Channel, Freeform, and whatever, you know, Netflix and Prime Video that are, this is a big market, a big demographic that producers and creators go after, is that middle-age to teenage high school kind of a sitcom type of drama. And this is very often a form of a storyline that you see play out. And of course, the main character in this case is going to be the young person, the kid, the teenager. They're just a lot of times they're just an ordinary young person going to school, dealing with, growing up and coming of age and all those things. And well, with that in mind, though, the villain or the conflict is very often brought about by the parent or the teacher or the authority figure. And very often, it's not done in such an obvious, villainous way. It's actually done in a much more comical way. In fact, many times, this is one of those types of stories where, it's a sitcom, and a lot of times you want to keep it lighthearted. You want to have reason to play the laugh track. And so it's not that there's this just villainous, evil parent, you know, with sharp teeth and an ugly snarl all the time and like evil stepmother vibes or anything like that. No, it's just very often the goofy, dumb dad who just doesn't get it. In fact, look at this throughout many of these sitcoms, and that's very often what you're going to see portrayed. You're going to see a very stupid, portrayed as stupid father figure. The dad always seems the one to be the dumb idiot comic relief, and very often creating and making life difficult and complicated for the teenager, the young kid who knows everything, or at least that's how the story portrays it. And then very often because of this, because the kid, the teen, they know so much more than their parent, their teacher, again, that authority figure, and that authority figure is just making life so difficult, and dad's just so dumb, making life so difficult. Well, very often the outcome is brought about as a result of defying authority, and it's glorified. And again, it's not obvious and in your face because, once again, they're very often portraying that parent, teacher, principal, dad, whatever, as just a goofball who's unintentionally villainous and who inadvertently creates a conflict that they're not even aware, they are very often aware that they created for the kid or the teenager in this case. But they are still nonetheless, when you read this narrative subtext into it, you realize that they are being painted as the villain and that defying authority is actually the favorable, what the narrative of that story is trying to communicate is the favorable outcome. And so this is something that you have to be aware of, and not just be aware of, but be also able to communicate to your young person, to your child who's watching. And again, I don't think that the answer is necessarily to shelter. Well, I'm just not going to let them watch that. And again, you get to draw that line. And there are certain times where it's like, well, no, absolutely not. This is going too far. We're not watching that. But maybe from time to time, sit down, watch the show with them, watch the story unfold with them, and say, hey, did you catch that? Did you notice that, you know, the dad there seemed to kind of be painted out to be kind of the bad guy? And did you notice that the child disobeyed the dad, the teacher, the parent, whatever it may be? And that was kind of what they were pushing for. It's a very great way to teach this. You don't just want to filter or shelter them rather and say, oh, you can't just see that. And again, there's a time and a place for that. Absolutely. But there's also a time and a place where you can sit there and now you're teaching them. You're not just discerning the narrative for your child. You're teaching them how to discern that narrative. And so discerning the narrative is a crucial part. And I spent a lot of time on that one because I really think if you can grasp that, if you can learn how to identify this very basic, simple framework of a story and see it incorporated into, again, all the movies that you watch and television shows that you're watching, and even into the news cycle of whatever, you know, show or personality you choose to get your news from, you're going to notice there's an overarching narrative. You know, just to give a quick example on the news side, you know, and when it comes to politics, I mean, if you're watching a certain channel, then it's Democrats bad, Republicans good, you know, all the time. And then the other channel flip-flops it. And again, we all have our political opinions where we stand and where we would lean, but understand that that narrative, when it drives even the news, the supposed truth you're supposed to be hearing, well, understand there's always going to be a bend. There's always going to be a bias, no matter how unbiased someone may claim to be. Understanding their underlying narrative helps you just to further discern it and be aware of it and know what's being communicated to you. And again, it's a great way to teach a young person, your family, your church, whoever you are leading to be a responsible digital citizen. It helps you to teach this framework, understand it, identify it, teach it so that everybody can discern the narrative. Well, another thing we're going to hit on quickly before we wrap up is, at least for this installment, is the aspect of content filtering. Again, the same concept applies here. Filtering is going to be better than sheltering. Now, this is a very, very potential, definitely touchy area because we're talking about the internet here. The internet is fully unbridled, unfiltered in that there are no regulations in place to regulate the internet, at least not in the United States. Whereas we have the FAA who regulates television content. And again, we could certainly find all kinds of vile things on television. It's actually somewhat regulated. The internet, no regulation at all. Any regulation that you want to implement has to be done on your end. And I highly recommend it. And so we want to filter, but we don't necessarily want to shelter. Now, once again, your call where to draw that line. If you say, I don't want my kids being able to access the internet at all until they're age 12 or fill in the blank, age 18, age whatever. That's your call. Lines need to be drawn and they're going to defer family to family, household to household, completely up to you. So you do need to have these kind of lines drawn. However, when the time comes, because here's the thing, even if you are able in some weird scenario to protect your child from seeing, ever accessing internet, ever watching a movie, ever seeing a TV show, ever even looking at a questionable billboard off the side of the road, if you're able to fully protect your young person from that the entirety of the time they live in your home, one day they will be exposed. When they're out from under your roof, they will be exposed. And they will be exposed having no exposure at all before. And they aren't going to know what to do with that. They're not going to know how to handle themselves. And so once again, maybe instead of fully sheltering, we learn how to filter. We learn how to teach discernment. And then we learn how to filter with some tools maybe that have to do with accountability. So these are a couple of tools, Covenant Eyes and Ever Accountable, that you install on your computer or your device. And all they're doing, they're not necessarily filtering content, but they are reporting content. So if one of these softwares or apps is installed on your device and you visit a questionable website, Well, an accountability partner, or, you know, many times a parent, if it's a case of a parent, a child, a parent is going to be notified, and they're going to get a notification that, hey, this questionable site was viewed. And when somebody has that sense of accountability, they think twice before getting curious. They think twice before going and clicking that link or searching for that certain type of adult content. And so Ever Accountable, Covenant Eyes, accountability, so there's a lot of them out there. Accountability software can be a very effective thing, not just for young people, not just for kids. I highly encourage us for adults as well. Men, we are just as vulnerable as a teenage boy. You know it. Don't act like you're not. It doesn't matter what age you're at, what stage of life you're at. We are all potentially vulnerable at any time. Accountability is always healthy. Consider implementing accountability softwares and accountability in general across the board for your entire family, including yourself. And so, in fact, I can't remember the exact quote, but it's something like accountability is not accountability if it only goes one way. Accountability is a two-way street, an open door honesty amongst all parties involved. And so be accountable. Consider these accountability softwares. Another more built-in way to do it, if you're using iPad or iPhone, is the built-in content and screen time restrictions. I've done a whole video on this before. It's on my YouTube channel. If you want to go to youtube.com/must-increase, you can go look that up. I believe the title of it is Locking Down Your Phone. And this is, it really is very powerful. I don't use Android, never have, so I couldn't tell you what they've got. I'm sure they have something comparable. But I can speak for iOS and iPad OS. This is a very effective way to lock down your devices in two ways. First of all, restricting adult content. The restrict adult content feature on these devices works really well, actually. Surprisingly well. And then but also beyond that, there's also just the simple screen time restrictions that says, hey, after, you know, an hour on games, you're going to get locked out of all games, or 30 minutes on social media, you're going to get locked out of all social media. And the only way to get back into those apps is to get approval from a parent or guardian. It's very effective. It's very powerful. I highly recommend, if you have a, let me put it this way. If you have a young person in your home who has an iPad or an iPhone, I would say if I could sign an executive order, stamp it with the law of the Medes, the seal of the law of the Medes and the Persians, I would say every child, every young person under the age of 18 that's living in your home should be required to have their phone locked down with screen time and content restrictions. If you as a parent are not doing it, it is because you are lazy. It is because you're lazy or you're a coward. You're afraid of your own child, your own teenager, to approach them and say, this is what we're going to do. Or you're just too lazy to figure it out. It's not that hard. It's very simple. Apple has actually, I'm very pleased with how easy and simple they've made this. Do it for your kids. But again, I'm not just going to stop there. I'm going to push a little harder. Men, women alike, adults, lock down your phones. Husbands and wives, make each other your accountability partners in that, hey, honey, you lock down my phone, type in a code so I can't get into these certain adult sites as restrict that adult content. Also, hey, go ahead and put some screen time limitations on there too, so I don't waste my God-given time staring at a screen and flipping through other people's images and videos and all of that stuff and just mindlessly scrolling on TikTok all day. Set these things in place. There's no reason why you shouldn't. I have these implemented on my phone. They are just again, it's a matter of, we have to just be honest. Let's be honest. And again, especially men out there, we are all vulnerable. We are all potentially vulnerable. And I've heard it said that why would you resist a temptation in the future when you have the power to outright eliminate it today? Why would you resist a future temptation when you have the power and the ability to outright fully eliminate that temptation today? So in other words, why would you allow your phone to even potentially load that image or that website with potentially adult content on it when you could completely lock it down to make it impossible for that to happen right now? So So use these features. Eliminate the temptation today so that you don't have to resist it later. So use these features, use this content and screen time restriction, adults, children alike. I think, again, it's very powerful. It's very effective. And I would recommend this highly because it requires you to install nothing extra on your phones and devices. It's built in and it works very well. I can vouch for it. I have a 6-year-old daughter and I do allow her to play on an iPad, but that is a very lockdown. I'm not concerned at all. If she's ever going to go look or see something she shouldn't, or spend too much time on it, or, you know, spend too much time watching Bluey or playing her little apps and games, because it's completely locked down. And the only way she gets more time or gets to do things on it that I haven't pre-approved is by sending a request to me that I have to explicitly approve. Again, if you're not using it, if you're a parent and your child's device isn't locked down, it's time to man up and it's time to do it. It's time to not be lazy anymore. Take the 10 minutes to set it up, if it takes that long, and set up screen time and content restrictions. And another tool, though, for when it comes to watching maybe content as a family, watching movies, watching TV as a family, is VidAngel. Now, VidAngel has evolved over the years. Now it is a subscription-based service product that connects with your many of your existing streaming services. It connects with Netflix. It connects with Amazon Prime. I can't remember all the others that it connects to, but it does, it integrates with these and filters movies and content. So it can filter out language. It can filter out inappropriate visual scenes. You simply go through beforehand, you connect your streaming service to it, and you go through and you check the options and say, hey, I don't want to hear any of these words. You can be as specific as you want. Like, I don't want to hear these specific words, or I just don't want to hear any language in general. And then the same thing with scenes. I don't want to, you know, see scenes that potentially have nudity in them or more sensual scenes like that. Or even something as extreme as I don't want to see people kiss. It will filter all of this out. It's subscription-based, but I think if you're watching television with your family, it's a worthy investment. And it allows you to, again, filter and just enjoy watching content without having to worry if something is going to come through. Again, you get to decide where you draw the lines. You get to decide what content we're going to learn to discern together, and also what content we're just not going to see. And this is going to evolve over time. You know, obviously there's things that my 6-year-old daughter absolutely is not going to be exposed to now, that maybe when she's older, it's like, okay, well, that will be more of a teaching moment at that time. But right now, her young mind can't comprehend it. And so a tool like VidAngel allows you to, again, draw those lines and quite literally decide what is heard and what is seen when you're watching certain shows and movies. So again, the idea here is that to filter is better than to shelter. We're not just going to shelter and try to lock out all the media content, all the TV, all the internet, all the movies, all the everything for my kid, and they never ever see it. Because again, one day they will see it. One day when they get out from under your roof on their own, they will see it. I'd say, and again, there's certain things that I'm not saying, oh, show them all the wickedness of the world intentionally. Absolutely not. But just understand that things are going to slip through, especially these narratives. These narratives are going to be incorporated into these, again, certain sitcoms and shows and movies and things like that. And it's a wonderful teaching opportunity for you to help them to understand because what's more satisfying than to know that your child is not just doing what mom and dad say, but they're actually living out the principles that you're teaching them. And that's this is a wonderful way to teach them in that way. Well, we got through just a couple, and I'm looking forward to going through the rest as we move along here. And so we're going to hit a few more in the next installment of this. But I'm so glad that you joined me for this particular part of this being and leading responsible digital citizens. I hope it's helping you, because again, if you practice these principles, if you live them out, you're going to be weird. You're going to be different. People are going to look at you and be like, again, why is that guy not on his phone all the time? You know, why, how is he able, how are his kids and his family actually able to sit around the dinner table and enjoy conversation without being distracted by text messages and notifications on their devices? Because you, by living that out, it will just be so noticeable that people will notice and they will see that positive influence. They'll recognize it and they'll follow your example. And so we have to realize, again, this digital thing, this media stuff, these screens, they're here to stay. And so we have to learn how to be responsible digital citizens. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will see you in the next one.
We are so glad you joined us for this episode. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you may listen to podcasts. Also, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star review and share this podcast with your friends. You can connect with us online at mustincrease.com. And if you'd like a topic or question to be featured on a future episode, send us a text to 615-900-4461. Thanks again for joining us for this episode, and we look forward to seeing you next time as we continue to increase truth and inspire hope in the lives of others right here on the Must Increase Podcast.